It was 5 years of AEW. That is what the promotion was celebrating this weekend. The first Double or Nothing back in 2019 in this very building that they were in last night, the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. And it gave us a little bit of everything that I think represents AEW in these first 5 years. One of the hallmarks of this company has been consistently excellent pay-per-views. The one thing you can say about AEW, I mean, you can say whatever you want about AEW, but the quality of their pay-per-views in terms of the matches, in terms of the in-ring, I would put that up against any other promotion in the world. I mean, they have put on some tremendous shows over the years. And what we had last night was another in a long line of quality shows. I thought it was very good. It was not their best show, but I still thought it was a very strong show last night. It had blood and violence. This is something that AEW has become known for. They love their violence. They love their thumbtacks and their plunder and their hardcore matches and their crazy stunts. They love their blood, lots of blood. They should start their own blood bank. If you were looking for violence and gore and blood, then you were in luck because you got plenty of that last night. You had an Anarchy in the Arena match. You had a barbed wire cage match. I mean, take your pick. And that wasn't even all of it. So you had that on the show. You also had some insanely stupid stunts because it wouldn't be an AEW show without them. So case in point, you had Adam Copeland nearly breaking both of his legs, diving off the top of the cage as he defended the TNT title against Malakai Black. And he was way up there. Okay, however high it was, 15 feet, a little over 15 feet. As I'm watching him, I'm thinking to myself, what is he thinking? You know, I'm thinking to myself, what is going through this man's head as he is standing up there and he is surveying the situation? It's the same thing that he must be thinking. What the fuck have I gotten myself into? Because I guarantee you he was thinking the same thing standing up on top of that cage once he was actually up there and he looked all the way down and he realized that he had wrapped this man in barbed wire so he couldn't put himself through the table. He was up there thinking, oh shit, because I can't climb down now. I've got to commit myself to the stunt here. We had that. We had Darby Allin literally setting another man on fire. So you had those stunts on the show. These are all hallmarks of Tony Khan's company. And do you know what else is a hallmark of Tony Khan's company? MJF. MJF is their biggest homegrown star. MJF went down with an injury at the end of last year. He lost the AEW World title to Samoa Joe. We have not seen MJF on television since. And his presence has been felt in terms of his presence not being there on the shows. Now, that's not like they don't have other people who could step in and take his spot for a period of time. They got plenty of people on the roster, but there is nobody else on the AEW roster like MJF. And we got him back on this show. Nobody, I guarantee, was happy as I was to see him on TV, and I was not expecting him back this soon, but there he was, and as happy as I was to see him, I can guarantee you that there was nobody more happy than Tony Khan to see MJF back on TV, because now, after this laundry list of injuries that all of his talent have been, I mean, people have been going down left and right. You look at the list of all the injured talent right now in AEW, you could put together one hell of a talent roster. And MJF was at the head of that list. So to get him back at a time when the ratings are going this way and not that way, and to get him back at a time when they can really use him, believe me, nobody is happier to have this man back on his show than Tony Khan, and he has been missed. Because not only does he have one of his top stars back now from the injured list, but he has one of his top stars, if not frankly his top star. I keep calling him one of. MJF is his top guy. And to have him back on TV and also have him out there basically playing rah-rah for AEW and pulling up his pant leg and showing a tattoo that he now has on his lower leg, the AEW logo, the AEW name, is tattooed now on this man's leg. At least, I will say this. At least he was smart enough to get it on his leg where it can be hidden in 5 years. And he had enough sense to get it there and not on his neck like Cody Rhodes. But he was out there, Mr. AEW, man. He was waving the flag, showing the tattoo. Everybody was going nuts. He felt out there like Mr. AEW. And that has to make Tony Khan feel very good. Now, of course, he's had him under lock and key for a while now. Most people, I think, already expected that he had re-signed probably a couple of years ago. And so, and when they dropped the whole bidding war of 2024 stuff a while back, I think we all figured that. So he's had him under contract now for a while, but Tony Khan now doesn't have to worry about MJF. He doesn't have to worry about MJF leaving, all the talk about people leaving. I mean, you hear it about a lot of people. You hear it about Ricky Starks. You hear it about Wardlow. You hear it about Malachi Black. Some may leave, some may not. These people are unhappy. These people may be unhappy. You don't have to worry about that now. MJF made it very clear he is AEW tried and true, and he is here to stay. And that has to put a smile on Tony Khan's face. We also have new champions, two new champions on this pay-per-view last night, which also means that all three of Tony Khan's big signings this year are champions. Because we have Okada, who is the Continental Champion. We have Will Ospreay, is the brand new International Champion. And Mercedes Moné is the AEW Women's TBS Champion, TBS Champion, whatever the fuck they call it. You have the Women's World title, now you have the TBS title. Mercedes is not the Women's World Champion, but she is the face of TBS now, which I think to the surprise of no one. I mean, come on. Did you really think that Tony Khan was going to bring this woman in, sign her for probably millions of dollars, and beat her in her first fucking match? I mean, use your head. Come on now. I like Willow just as much as anybody else, but she had no chance of walking out of Las Vegas with that title unless she goes and buys herself a TBS title replica. Okay, that she can drown her sorrows away and take the replica belt home with her. But Mercedes was always going to walk in and walk out with that championship. And so now, they all have gold. Now, is it going to make a difference? I don't know. I mean, he signed all these people. It hasn't really seemed to make a difference in terms of the actual shows, but titles for everyone. Everyone's got a title now. Look at that. I got two titles right behind me on the wall. There you go. I took the Solo Monster one down, though. We had that up for King of the Ring yesterday. But I took it down. We'll bring it back later this week. Was it a perfect show? No. Was it their best show? No. But I did think it was a strong effort. I enjoyed it overall. But the one thing I did not enjoy, and it has to be said, because it remains my biggest pet peeve with these shows, as great as they can be. It was 11 o'clock last night, and the first of three, what they billed as three main events, they said there was a triple main event on this show. The first of the three main events on this show was still in the ring at 11 o'clock at night, which means we had the two other main events yet to come, and it was already 11 p.m. out on the East Coast. That is ridiculous. That should never happen. And yet there it was. Swerve and Christian went out after that, and then we still had Anarchy in the arena, and they were only first getting started with that at midnight. It was a very long night, as is the case usually with these AEW shows. When you have an Anarchy in the arena match, because the thing in the time management on these shows is just awful. Absolutely fucking awful. When you have a show that has an Anarchy in the arena match, cool. That's the big attraction on the show. We know this because it's been 3 years in a row now that we've had Anarchy in the arena. We also had a barbed wire cage match, as I mentioned. Two hardcore type matches, two hardcore attractions that people can pay to see. When you have two matches like that, you do not also need an FTW title match with more garbage and more tables and more bullshit. You don't need to do it. That match did not need to be on this show. There were at least two matches, that one and the Orange Cassidy match, that did not have to take place on this pay-per-view. And you could have trimmed some of the fat, and the show would have gotten, you know, a little bit shorter in terms of the runtime. And it can make a difference in terms of the, you know, when the show is over and you look back on it and go, man, that was a good show, but fuck, it was exhausting. They're just matches that don't need to be on these shows. And you know, he tries to give people their money's worth, and he tries to, again, fill the cards up as much as he can, because Tony Khan's goal is always to go out and have the best pay-per-view ever, right? Everything is the best ever. And so I get that that's his mentality, but it's completely unnecessary. And it's the one thing, if I had to pick the one thing that bothers me that I wish I had the power to change, about these shows, that's what it would be. Again, I understand the mindset behind it because, look, I will say, I paid $50 for this show too. And I can understand that, well, we want to give people their money's worth, right? They're paying their hard-earned money, and so we want to give them the best possible show that we can, right? I understand that. And I am one of the people who paid for their show. Now, you should see some of the messages that I got last night and even into this morning. I was getting messages from people and all the fucking incels that were tweeting me, "You paid for this show? You actually paid for this show? I didn't pay for this show. What an idiot. You paid for this show." Yeah, you should see the fucking messages that I got from people last night when I mentioned the fact that, you know, I actually paid the $50 that you have to pay YouTube or Fight, because now the show, you can buy it on Fight and Bleacher Report. Fuck Bleacher Report. I don't bother with that anymore. But yes, I paid for the show. So I had to deal with all the incels saying, you know, haha, you paid for the show. Yes, I did pay for the show. You know why I paid for the show? Because I actually work for a living. And you might too. You might actually get hired if your fucking resume was not written in crayon with fucking grease stains on it, you fucking weirdos. So I just wish that these shows would be a little bit shorter, and I think they would be a little bit more enjoyable for it. And not just for me as a content creator, but even if, look, I didn't go live last night, and it was still a long show. Obviously, I usually do go live when it's over. That's why you're getting me today, here on Memorial Day, and not late last night, because, what I mean, there was no point. Fucking do a stream half dead. I mean, what's the point in doing that? But in any event, that's the one thing I would say about that. Less is more. I always say it. And I do believe that. Less is more. Look, I paid a hell of a lot more than $50, okay, to go to WrestleMania. And I felt the exact same way. I didn't sit there and go, well, God, I paid hundreds of dollars for this ticket and the airfare and the hotel. Boy, give me 15 fucking matches. No, I'm sitting there sometimes going, what the fuck? Thank God now it's two nights. That's the one reason I like the two nights. Because it just got to a point with these shows where it just got to be too much. Less is more. The show should not start at 7 o'clock and end at 12:33 in the morning. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But let's get into it here. I promise you it will not be a 5.5-hour stream. This is your AEW Double or Nothing 2024 review. I am the Solemn Monster. So they had two matches on the buy-in pre-show. And yes, this is stream number one. I thank you, Fire Panda, for the reminder. This is stream number one. I will be back with you later tonight after Raw because we have the post King of the Ring edition of Raw. So that will be later on tonight. But you got me now here during the daytime. Hey, Gio, thank you for the super chat. Says, screw them incels, bro. I saw the tweet. The tweets are still coming in. It's actually hilarious to me. You should see it, mainly on the Copeland. Wait until I get to the Copeland stuff. You should see the bullshit. The mountain of absolute bullshit that I have seen by posting what I thought of the Adam Copeland dive from the top of the cage. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. They got a lot of sand in their vagina. Holy shit. When you see how hot and bothered people got by this, it's a beautiful thing. It really is, but we'll get to that later. So there were two matches on the buy-in pre-show. Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa, they had their issues of late. Tonight they went one-on-one. Deonna picked up the win. How did it go down? Purrazzo spun out of a Tijuana bomb into the Fujiwara armbar. Rosa, though, escaped and then applied a Cobra crossface. But as Rosa went to go kick away from the ropes to avoid Deonna getting the rope break, Deonna spun over close to the ropes on the other side and grabbed onto the bottom rope to steal the pin, and the referee never saw it, so it was a win for Deonna Purrazzo. Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed, they picked up a win over Brian Cage in the Gates of Agony, and we had the heels. They hit a triple powerbomb on Billy, and Toa Leona had him beat. Bowens, though, broke up the pin. Brian Cage went to ringside. And he grabbed the chair, but the Vegas Golden Knights mascot, took the chair away from Brian Cage. And I don't know what the hell the mascot is supposed to be. Maybe somebody can fill me in. It looked like a fucking dinosaur to me. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's some kind of gecko, or I don't know. But whatever the mascot is, I think the mascot's name is Chance, I believe, from what I was able to see. Anyway, this was not the first time the mascot has had a run-in with Brian Cage this year. There was an episode, I believe, of Collision earlier this year. They were in Vegas, and the mascot was doing the Prince Nana dance when Brian Cage attacked the mascot from behind and knocked him down. So I guess he didn't forget. Cage went after the mascot. Caster hit Cage with a Famouser on the floor. Inside, Billy caught one of the members of the Gates of Agony with an inside cradle and got the 3 count to win the match for Billy and the Acclaimed. There was also a segment, there was some news here on the pre-show. There was a segment where, and this is another one of these situations where it's a Gila monster. The fuck is that? A Gila monster? I don't know what that is. Okay. I'm being told it is a Gila monster. Is that similar to a solo monster? Okay, well, you learn something new every day. I don't know what that is, but in any event, this is another thing. I tweeted about this. Tony Khan made an announcement on the pre-show, and it just completely devolved into WWE fans and AEW fans just sniping back and forth like a bunch of fucking losers. But I actually thought that this was a good announcement. So Renee was out on stage. She introduced Martha Hart and Tony Khan. And Martha noted that it has been 25 years since the founding of the Owen Hart Foundation. It's been 25 years since Owen Hart passed away. I talked about that on episode 863 yesterday. Hard to believe it's been 25 years, but it has been. And she said that she and Tony had something special in mind this year for the Owen Hart Cup, because they're bringing it back. This is going to be the third year in a row. And they're going to be doing the finals on July 10th back in Calgary at the Saddle Dome as part of the Calgary Stampede. So she said that they had a special announcement to make. And then Tony Khan spoke. And Tony Khan said that it was back on Christmas Eve that Martha told him, I think he said Martha told him, this is what he claims, okay, that Martha had this great idea. And then Martha Hart told him that we should do something special for the tournament. What they came up with is that the winners of the men's and the women's Owen Hart Cup this year will each receive a world championship match at AEW All In London at Wembley Stadium. Now, I should say he didn't really say this announcement. He screamed it, as he usually, he's so awkward with these things. You know what? They really do. They need a commissioner or somebody who could just kind of come out and make these announcements. He's so fucking weird. But anyway, so after screaming the announcement, I love it. I think it's great. Let's raise the stakes, right? We just did that this weekend. Let's raise the stakes for SummerSlam. Let's raise the stakes for All In London. So I like the announcement. Just like I did, you know, what WWE did with the King of the Ring this year. And as I said before, people were sniping back and forth. Oh, you know, how convenient. Where did I hear this from? You know, where? And it's like, who gives a shit? It was the right move to make. Now, did they come up with this idea 7 months ago? 5 months ago? 6 months ago? That's what he claims. I don't know. I don't care. I like it. But here's the thing. It's not enough to just say that the winner of the men's tournament gets a world title match and the winner of the women's tournament gets a world title match. What you need to do in this tournament, because I look back to what they did last year, and you had CM Punk was in the Men's Owen Cup, and you had Samoa Joe in the Men's Owen Cup, and even a guy like Ricky Starks, who was not at their level, but was seemingly, at the time, I guess not anymore, a star on the ascent, and he went on to win the entire thing, but you had some big names in that tournament. But in the same token, you also had Satoshi Kojima, and you also had Dustin Rhodes. All due respect to those two men, because they're legends. And again, I respect the hell out of both of them. You do not need to have Satoshi Kojima and people like that and people like Dustin Rhodes in this fucking tournament if a World Heavyweight Championship match is up for grabs and at stake in the main event of All In London at Wembley Stadium. So they need to do a better job this year of including bigger names in this tournament to make it a little less obvious when somebody is going to take the L. So hopefully they will stock this thing up with mostly big names on both sides, but especially in the men's tournament, get some big names in there. You know, I know you want to have a spoiler, not even a spoiler, but you want to have, a name in there that can lose. You don't necessarily want to put every single top guy that you have, because then people have to lose. You may not want to beat them. You know, I understand that there are political implications to putting these brackets together, but as long as they do that, then I'm all for it, and I think it's a great idea, and I don't have an issue with it. As far as early predictions, I mean, to me, you ask me right now, who do I think is going to win the Owen this year? I think Will Ospreay has got to be the favorite on the men's side. I think Mariah May has to be the favorite on the women's side. We'll see, because we're still 7 or 8 weeks away from the finals. Well, not even, maybe about 6 weeks, 6 or 7 weeks away from the finals. We don't even know who's in the tournaments yet, but those would be the early favorites for me. So we get into the main card here. Thank you, by the way, to all the folks who gifted channel memberships. I appreciate you very much. We have people who did that last night and super chatted last night, too, when they thought I was going live. So Jerome and everybody else who was in the chat last night, thank you as well. And we'll get to all your messages here in a little bit. The main card opened with Roderick Strong defending the international championship against Will Ospreay. This was a very good opener, and it almost went horribly wrong less than 5 minutes into this match. So when I talk about stunts being a hallmark of a lot of these AEW shows and seeing a lot of very stupid things that shouldn't happen, we got our first example of it in the first 5 minutes of this main card here on this show. This is one of the dumbest spots that I have... Actually, you know what? I was going to say this is one of the dumbest spots I've seen in a long time, but it was the dumbest spot I saw until the TNT title match later in the show. So Don Callis is on commentary for this. Ospreay tried for a hidden blade right away, right at the beginning, as Roddy was posing during his entrance, but he missed. Ospreay flew outside, and he quickly disposed of Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, okay, because the Kingdom were outside in Roddy's corner. So Strong tried to slam Ospreay on top of the top part of the barricade by the timekeeper's area. Ospreay flipped over it, though, and then wiped out the members of the Kingdom. Ospreay was in control until Roddy, in the ring, took the referee, and this allowed Mike Bennett to hold Ospreay up on his shoulders outside in a doomsday device position. Okay, so he's got Will Ospreay up on his shoulders. Matt Taven, this was so stupid for so many reasons. Matt Taven gets in the ring. Now, this is not a no disqualification match. Okay, keep that in mind. Matt Taven gets in the ring. And Matt Taven is going to hit the ropes, and he's going to do a dive out over the top rope and wipe out Will Ospreay. Okay, that's what he's going to do. The referee is over by the ropes, kneeling down with Roddy on the side of the ring where Matt Taven is going to hit the ropes. There is no way that this referee does not know, okay, even if you check your brain at the door with these shows, there is no way that this referee does not know that Matt Taven is hitting the ropes. Yet he has to pretend like he doesn't know, which therefore makes the referee, and they do this all the time in this company, makes the referee look like a fucking geek, but the referee has to pretend he doesn't see it. Okay, there's no shadow, he doesn't see the ropes moving, he doesn't see it. So that's the first stupid thing. Matt Taven hits the ropes, and he comes flying off, and it looked like his feet clipped the top rope as he soared out over the top. He wipes out Ospreay, and it looked like Will Ospreay landed right on top of his head. Now, I think he got his hands down to cushion the blow, but it looked bad. Even the announcers were like, oh, shit, you know, please go check on him. And you could tell there's like a little bit of a hush with the crowd here. So as dumb as that was, the referee having to play stupid here and pretend he didn't know what was going on, you see the spot, and again, Taven almost killed himself. Ospreay almost killed himself. Absolutely just brain-dead stupid spot for so many different reasons, including the stuff with the referee. And it nearly killed one of their top stars in the first 5 minutes of this show. Very dumb. Thankfully, Ospreay was okay. He avoided a backbreaker into a corkscrew kick. Taven and Bennett again distracted the referee. And Wardlow took forever because Ospreay's in the ring with his back turned. He's motioning, come on, come on, come in the ring. And it's like they're stalling. And I'm like, what's going on here? What are they stalling for? And they were waiting. Wardlow was a little late. Wardlow gets in the ring. He took forever to come up behind Ospreay to attack him. And he was about to powerbomb Will Ospreay. The referee stumbles backward. I don't even know why he stumbled backwards, but he stumbles backwards, and he bumps into them and turns around, and he sees Wardlow. And so he starts, you know, yelling at Wardlow to get out of the ring and go to the floor. And Wardlow sold it like, oh, gee, golly. Oh, okay. All right. Oh, gee. You know, it's not like he sold it like he was, oh, shit, I got caught, or he was upset, or he was angry. He was like, okay. All right. Sure. No problem. Okay. I'll leave the ring. So Ospreay followed with a sky twister press onto the kingdom on the outside of the ring. Finally, Bryce Remsburg does eject Wardlow and Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, and security escorts them out. Back inside, Ospreay hit the wall walk, Enziguri into a fisherman suplex. He tried a leap of faith, but he landed on his feet, jammed his knee in the process, and Ospreay wanted Hidden Blade. Roddy, though, rolled through into a Texas Cloverleaf. So Strong hit a superplex, held on, into a torture rack backbreaker for a two count. Roddy hit the fireman's carry gut buster, but as he went for the sick kick, Ospreay countered into a powerbomb. We got a crazy sequence of counters until Will fired off an Os cutter, could not follow up. Now, for some reason, Bryce Remsburg decides he has to check on Roddy. He's very concerned about Roderick Strong. It didn't look like anything out of the ordinary. But he goes over and he's checking on this man. And Ospreay, they zoom in on his face, and he like mouths the words like, oh, not again. You know, after what happened in the match at Dynasty with Bryan Danielson, where he hit him with the Tiger Driver, and he was so apologetic after it. He could, you know, he was so upset that he nearly paralyzed this man. He thought, oh my God, it happened again. So he's in the corner, and he's waiting over there. And Don Callis gets up off commentary, and he goes over to Will Ospreay, and he's telling him to go snap this man's neck. He said, he's already going to the hospital. Break his neck. And Ospreay shoves Bryce out of the way. It looks like he was going to go hit the Tiger Driver, but he hesitated. And that allowed Roddy to hit another gut buster and a sick kick for a close two count. Ospreay countered the end of Heartache into a Hurricanrana pin for two. Roddy popped up with a knee lift and then again went for the end of Heartache. Ospreay, though, landed on his feet. He hit a Hidden Blade and the Stormbreaker for the win to crown a brand new AEW International Champion. The exact right move to make here was putting this title on Will Ospreay. It should not have gone down any other way. And Callis is out there going, we won, we won. You know, like he did something big here. So Ospreay strikes gold for the first time in his AEW career. It will not be the only gold that this man holds this year. You can mark that down. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, I think, to make that prediction, but I'm going to make it right now. His first taste of gold and not his only taste here in 2024. But with the momentum he has, this was a no-brainer. You know, you don't worry about putting over Roderick Strong. You put over Will Ospreay and you keep him strong and you keep his momentum going because he's the guy right now. Roddy is not the guy. Will Ospreay is the guy. And now he can take this title and he can move on to bigger and better. I thought it was a hell of an opening match. I'm not going to point off, though, for that dumb doomsday spot at the beginning. Now, Wardlow got ejected. And I'm going to be watching to see if Adam Cole calls him out on Wednesday because he failed to do his job. Remember what happened after Wardlow lost his title shot to Samoa Joe. And Adam Cole said, you had one job. You had one job and you couldn't even do that. And so now your only job here in this group is to make sure that all the other members, Roddy and the Kingdom, they keep their titles. That's all you need to do. Well, he failed to do that. So what will happen now? Adam Cole should be coming out on television this week, you know, and calling him out for it. And again, they didn't have to do that here on this show. They didn't have to give that away. They could save that for TV, especially with what they had planned in the very next segment that came after this, which had a lot of people talking. Adam Cole was out to the ring by himself, and he was walking pretty well, which is good to see. He said it was story time with Adam Cole, and he told the Las Vegas crowd that they all suck. He He said he should be checking on Roddy or hanging out with the Kingdom since they just got thrown out of the building, which begs the question, why wasn't he? Why did he come out here? I mean, I know, but I mean, if you think about it, why did he come out here? He really didn't have any reason to come out here and address the audience. It's almost as if they had this all planned. So he said that he should be home resting so he can get back in the ring sooner. Then he pulled out the devil mask from the angle with MJF, and he said, you know, there's a little devil inside all of us. And he said that when he is 100%, we will give the devil his due, and his name is... And then the lights went out. A video played on the Tron with a figure walking down. It's from a first-person perspective, so we couldn't see who it was. Although we saw a hand, and I could tell, just from the hand, I could tell who it was. So this person is walking down a hallway. There's a door that's ajar. And this person pushes the door open. And in this room, it's just showcasing various MJF artifacts. His diamond ring. They have the giant poker chip that he won in that ladder match at All Out a few years ago. The dog collar was sitting on a shelf, obviously from his match with CM Punk. And then there was a mannequin in the middle of the room, because who among us does not have a life-size mannequin that we put our clothing on and our jacket on in the middle of our house? So on this mannequin, there's a red sport jacket and the Burberry scarf is around its neck. Then the person pulls out, I guess from maybe the jacket pocket, he pulls out a partially torn photo of Adam Cole. And then he lifts up the other torn half of the photo to show MJF. And you could hear the fans in the arena. They react big to that. They cut back to the arena. They play MJF's music. And the fans erupted. And out walks MJF, dressed like Triple H when he returned from the torn quad at Madison Square Garden back in 2000. I mean, right down to the same outfit. He had the denim vest over the leather jacket. I mean, this could not have been any more obvious here what he was going for. And he walks out there. He's in fantastic shape. Obviously, he's, you know, been hitting the gym and getting ready for this return. The man was shredded. MJF got in the ring. He looked down at the devil mask for a moment, which was on the mat. Crowd's chanting, holy shit. MJF is looking at Cole, who wanted a big hug. And so the crowd chanted, you fucked up, at Adam Cole. MJF decided to give him a hug. And then he promptly kicked this man in the balls. Cole's first bump, by the way, his first real bump since getting hurt. MJF picked up the microphone, he knelt down, and he called Cole a noodle-arm, bobble-headed son of a bitch, and he called for someone to get this shit stain out of his ring. Gee, I wonder where he got that from. So trainers helped Cole to the back while MJF stayed in the ring. And I do wonder if that was more an issue of sort of putting a button on the issue for now, temporarily, with Adam Cole. If Cole is not ready to get back in the ring, and I mean, there's been no reports about any health updates on him, where he is in his progress from his surgeries. And because there was a very, very bad injury that he sustained last year. I think it was more than one surgery that he had. So we don't know how close. I mean, he's walking around now, which is great, but we don't know how close he is to an in-ring return. So this may have been their way of saying, okay, get this fucking guy out of my ring. I'm moving on to something else for the time being. Just a thought. Maybe that's what that was. But MJF said that he trusted Cole. He says that will never happen again. He said Cole didn't take him out. He merely woke him up. He said now he remembers exactly who he is. He said he's the greatest wrestler on God's green earth and a generational talent. He said that unlike all of the schmucks in the back, he didn't need a New Japan or a Vince McMahon to make him, because MJF made MJF. His first promo back, and he's out here dressed like Triple H and name-dropping Vince McMahon. He couldn't help himself. He said, no more haha, no more friendship, no more kangaroo kicks, no more bullshit. He said he was back to being driven by what makes him the best, and he wasn't talking about love, he was talking about hate. Hate, hate, hate. And when he's driven by hate, nobody is safe. He picked the devil mask up off the mat. He called it stupid and goofy. He said that masks are adorned by cowards who are hiding. He said he's done hiding and apologizing for being the best. He said it's not his fault that all the fan favorites suck a big old bag of donkey dicks compared to him. I may have to start using that. I like that insult. MJF said that he would need to mask or need a mask to prove that no one is on the level of the devil. He said the mask makes him think of the end of 2023 and it turns his stomach in knots. He took his jacket off. He said the mask could go straight to hell. Put the mask on the mat and he proceeded to do a Ric Flair strut. Well, it was really a Fargo strut. But he did the Flair strut, dropped the elbow like Flair used to drop on the inanimate objects. Well, Flair used to drop it on his jacket. I know once he dropped it on, it was either his book or Mick Foley's book. I think he dropped the elbow on it. Flair does that now, but he does it when there's no cameras around because, I mean, he's of that age. You know, he just does it. So anyway. So then he picked up the mask, he spat on it, and he tossed it into the crowd. He said he's been betting on himself since day one. He said that he's all in, double or nothing. And regarding his contract status, he pulled up one leg of his pants. He showed off a tattoo that read, "Bet on yourself." And it had the AEW logo in the middle. I think it might have been a poker chip, but it had the AEW logo in the middle. And he said he's not fucking leaving, and the fans roared with approval. This was a tour de force performance right here, and exactly, this was exactly what AEW needs right now. They needed this man back in the worst way, and the timing could not be any better for them now, heading into the summer and heading into their next Wembley Stadium show. They dropped the whole bidding war of 2024 stuff a while back. It's not like that's a new thing that they just stopped talking about. They stopped talking about it a while ago. Nobody believed that this man was leaving. Nobody who actually took a second to really think, I think, expected that MJF was going to leave. Because also, look, I said he re-signed before he even came back in 2022. I didn't know that, but that, yeah, just common sense. He came back. They put the AEW World title on him. Tony Khan ran with him as his champion for a year. He's not doing that unless he has a long-term commitment to this man, and he has him under lock and key for a certain period of time. He's been burned too many times by WWE trying to fuck with him, right? That's all he ever talks about, is how WWE fucks with him and does this and that and contract tampering. Do you think they would have ran as hard as they did with MJF as long as they did if he didn't know that he was safe and he had him under contract for an extended period of time? It's just common sense. But for him to go out there and articulate that finally, instead of going out there and saying, "Oh, hey, my buddy Nick Khan, and hey, Paul Levesque, you know, call me." You know, instead of doing that stuff like he was doing before, he goes out there now and he is just the biggest cheerleader for AEW. And he is saying, "This is the place to be. This is my home. This is where I made my name. And this is where I'm going to be for the foreseeable future." So whether it was 2022, 2023, whether it was January, of course, MJF is locked in, and he's not going anywhere for a while. Do I think that MJF is going to be AEW for life? Very few people in wrestling stay in one place for the duration of their career. Do I think one day he'll be in WWE? Absolutely. Do I think that's going to be in the next 5 years? Probably not. But do I think it'll eventually happen? Of course. But it's good for Tony Khan that his biggest star now is locked down, and he can go out there and let the fans know this is the place to be, and put over AEW as a number one. So that was very important, I thought. But now more than ever, Tony Khan needed somebody to go out there like that and make that kind of a statement. And injuries have been a very big problem for Tony Khan. As I mentioned before, he lost Adam Cole. He lost Kenny Omega. Then he lost MJF, among others. MJF is the biggest star they have. Biggest star they have, bar none. Biggest homegrown star that they have is MJF. And doing this segment here on this show, even though it may have for some people gotten lost in all the noise of last night because there was so much other shit that came after this, I think it was smart because now it creates interest going into Dynamite on Wednesday. You know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to drum up interest in Dynamite and Collision and get the numbers up. Again, he's in the middle of a negotiation period with Warner Brothers Discovery. This is the most important year in the history of this company right now. So he needs all the help he can get to try to get those numbers back up, make them look as sexy as possible going into this very important period. And so you don't want to give away the store here, but you put MJF on the show and you let people know he's back and he's probably going to be on TV. I would imagine he'll be on TV this week. I mean, you certainly want people thinking that he's going to be on TV this week. So I thought that was smart. You know, get some eyeballs back on the show, hopefully. The fans treated him here like the biggest babyface in the world. That does not necessarily mean that he is going to be a babyface. And I certainly hope he is not going to be a babyface the way that he was last year. That version of MJF needs to die. He has evolved from that now. We can leave that in the past. The stuff with him and Adam Cole, it worked. You know, it was organic. It took off. They ran with it. They got to work a Wembley match in the main event against each other. It ran its course. It's over. This is the version now of MJF that we need on TV. We don't need the sappy comedy guy, kangaroo kick, all that bullshit like he said in the promo. That's dead. That's buried. It's over. It's done. This is the version of MJF that we need to see. Adam Cole should be his first target in theory because of the way that things were left at World's End. But again, not knowing what his injury status is, they may not be able to go to that. Otherwise, I would say that would make sense as the Wembley match for MJF this year. You know, it won't be the main event, but you run it back 1 year later, MJF against Cole. He can beat Adam Cole and then move on to something else, but it just may not be possible. But keep in mind, they're also doing an angle right now involving the Elite and their takeover, basically. It's like a hostile takeover of the company in many ways, which is strange. Because Tony Khan is back, and you would think that if the president and CEO of the company, who would have seniority over any EVP, why are the Young Bucks allowed to run roughshod over this company? But why ask why? If the Elite are running roughshod and MJF is Mr. AEW, you would think that they're going to butt heads at some point very soon. Him and the Bucks, him and Jack Perry, right? It's only a matter of time. And that would be one way to spice that angle up, is to get MJF involved. But Tony Khan just got a big gift, and that is getting this man back on TV. For the Unified Trios titles, it was Switchblade, Jay White, and the Guns taking on Death Triangle, Pac, Penta, and Rey Fénix. You can believe it, this was Death Triangle's first match together as a unit since January of 2023. Jay White bailed from having to face Pac at the beginning. He didn't want any part of this man. The Lucha Bros made quick tags on Austin Gunn. Colton tagged in. He suffered the same fate. Austin took a diving double stomp low from Penta before Penta and Fénix hit double dives outside. White tried to blindside Pac with a Blade Runner, but instead hit a DDT that violently spiked Pac into the mat. Pac was isolated until Penta made the hot tag and the Lucha Bros ran wild. Taz said that this was kind of funny because the Fénix did a move. He did the rope walk kick and then a splash off of his brother's shoulders onto Austin. And Taz made a comment on commentary that he did that move in training once with Spike Dudley. So I chuckled at that. White tagged in, immediately ate a bounce back kick from Fénix and a spinning fireman's carry jackhammer by Penta for two. Pac tagged in, dropped Jay White with a bounce back German, but from there the match broke down. All six men ended up down. White ran into a thrust kick by Pac, but he avoided the Black Arrow as Colton and Austin were dropped with German suplexes. White got spiked with Fear Factor as the Guns tried to bring their golden baseball bat into the ring. Referee Rick Knox tried to stop them. He was distracted. Now it's Rick Knox. So a ball of yarn would distract Rick Knox, but at least in this situation, he actually had good reason to be distracted. So for once, I could say, good job by Rick Knox. He actually had a reason to have his attention diverted. Usually it doesn't take more than, again, a ball of yarn, a laser pointer, you know, a hot woman in the crowd. Doesn't take much to distract this man. So while he was distracted, Pac went up for the Black Arrow, only to be crotched by the returning Juice Robinson. He is back. The juice is loose. He's been out for months. He had back surgery, I think, back in November. So White finally connected with Blade Runner and got the pin on Pac to retain the titles. The action was good. More importantly, though, the gang got Juice Robinson back. So now the squad is once again complete. I still am hoping we get a singles match, though, between Jay White and Pac. They certainly were teasing it here. I have to hope and think that we'll get it on TV in these next few weeks, maybe even this week. We had Timeless Toni Storm against Serena Deeb for the AEW Women's World Championship. Deeb tied Storm up with the Paradise Lock early on, maybe the most polarizing move in all of wrestling, and then drop kicked her in the ass to break the hold. Storm fought back by sending Deeb to the apron and leveling her with a hip attack. And this was quite the hip attack here, because it knocked her off the apron at like halfway, nearly to the barricade. So Deeb came back with a flying octopus hold as Luther got the crowd behind Tony, who got a rope break by biting the rope. And at that point, Serena zoned in on the left leg. Tony wanted a choke bomb, but Deeb countered into a triangle choke. Tony got free and sank in a clover leaf. After a rope break, both women slugged it out. Deeb won the exchange and was toying with Tony. And we got another strike exchange. There was a little miscommunication that led to Tony hitting a choke bomb for a near fall. So Serena was able to dodge the sweet cheek music into a single leg crab and was slamming the knee down repeatedly on the mat. And Toni Storm was screaming and crying out in pain. Mariah May was about to throw in the towel on the outside, but she got stopped by Luther. Luther would not allow her to do it. Now, this is similar to how Toni Storm did the same thing for Mariah May a few weeks ago, throwing the towel in. So she was going to return the favor here. Luther put a stop to it. Toni got to the ropes, and she went outside to regroup. And she looked up, and she saw Luther holding the towel. And she scolded him and called him a bastard. And then actually tossed the towel into the crowd, never knowing that it was actually Mariah May who wanted to toss the towel in. A little foreshadowing going on here. Back inside, Toni hit a snap German. Deeb flipped her off, and Toni ultimately hit Storm Zero for a close two. Toni wanted one on the apron, but her knee gave out, and Serena hit Deeb Tox on the apron, and then a proper one back inside for the closest of two counts, which popped the crowd. Both women went to the corner up the ropes. Toni hit an avalanche Storm Zero and then a proper one for the win. And Toni celebrated, went on stage with Mariah May, and the two women were rolling around in confetti on the stage, which was quite the visual. It was quiet in the first half. They really won the crowd over with some of those near falls, though, in the second half. This was a very well-worked match, and I think maybe the best Toni Storm match in the Timeless gimmick since she started doing it. Like mechanically, it was a very good match. We also had the nice little callback there with the towel spot, and I think we should start seeing little hints of things like that as we, you know, get closer and closer to Wembley. And if I'm right, and Mariah May is the favorite to win the Owen, you know, instead of doing a turn where Toni berates her and then shuns her, or beats her up, or Mariah May turns on Toni, it could be as simple as Mariah May winning the Owen, right? And now there's real drama here, because now she's next in line for a shot at Tony's title. That's how I would play it. I wouldn't have one person turn on the other in this case. We had Orange Cassidy against Trent Barretta, one of those matches I mentioned that did not need to be on this show. But it was. Don Callis was on commentary, back on commentary for this. They played Cassidy's theme. He didn't come out. Then they played his old Where Is My Mind theme by the Pixies, and he made his way out. We'll see if that's a one-off or if the old music is back. I hope it's just a one-night thing. Both men slugged it out right at the bell, which at least that's the way it should be in a grudge match like this. Cassidy had a run of offense. Barretta gouged the eyes and then grabbed Cassidy's arm from ringside and pulled him throat first into the turnbuckle, the bottom turnbuckle. Late in the match, Cassidy threw the light kicks and then some heavy kicks at Barretta before hitting him with a running dropkick. Cassidy went up top. Trent rolled to the apron to avoid him. Cassidy jumped from the second rope. He got kicked by Barretta, who then performed a pile driver on the apron. And hey, if a pile driver on the ring steps isn't going to do shit to this man, then a pile driver on the apron ain't nothing for him. Back in the ring, Cassidy faked a hug. When Trent came in, he hit a Michinoku driver for two. Barretta hit the half and half and strong zero, but only got two. Trent mocked the hug. but then ran right into a beach break. Cassidy wanted an orange punch, but ran into a Gogo Plata. And Cassidy used the bottom rope to float over and get the flash pin. Another fluke win for the Orange Man here with Trent Barretta. Again, we already saw that on television a few weeks ago. They did the same thing here. After the match, Barretta was on his knees. He was looking down at the mat in frustration. He just couldn't believe it. Barretta rolled to the apron. He sat there for a moment before making his exit. As he was leaving, and he kind of went on the side of the stage and was heading into the crowd, Rocky Romero came out. He's trying to get his attention and talk to him. Here comes Renee, and Renee comes out and wants to get a word with him, and he said, "I'm not doing this. I'm done." And Barretta exited through the crowd. I don't think anybody honestly believes that Orange Cassidy, no matter how hard Don Callis tries to recruit this man, I don't think anybody honestly believes that Orange Cassidy is going to join the Don Callis family. But they're still playing this angle out. There was no big development here on this show as far as that angle. The match itself, it was okay. I mean, it was nothing special. I just don't care about this. We already saw Cassidy get the win over him once. Now we got it again. As far as Trent, it looks, based on what they did here, like they're doing an angle where he's going to quit. They're certainly teasing that idea based on what they did here. But later in the show, Don Callis was in the back. Don Callis, he got more FaceTime on this show than half their roster. This was like the fourth time on this show that we saw this guy, fourth or fifth time. So Don Callis is in the back with Lexi Nair. And said that based on what he saw from Cassidy's match, on Wednesday, he's going to be presenting a contract to the newest member of the Don Callis family. Never actually said who it was going to be. So I still say it's going to be Trent. It just seems the obvious route to go here, that they're trying to swerve everybody by making you think that Trent is going to quit. Trent is going to go his own way. Callis wants Cassidy. Of course, if they do go that way where he actually brings Trent into the fold over Cassidy, if you think about it from a logical perspective, Orange Cassidy has now beaten Trent Barretta twice in a row. So why exactly would Don Callis want Trent Barretta in the Don Callis family? They're going to have to work this a certain way if they do it. Yeah, like maybe he is going to present a contract to Cassidy, but then Trent shows up and fucking murders this man. And Don Callis is so impressed, he presents the contract to Trent instead. Maybe they do it, in a way like that. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Internet privacy is important to all of us, myself included. There are just certain things you don't want shared with the rest of the world. It would be like WWE bringing back Stone Cold Steve Austin for a surprise cameo in the Royal Rumble and wanting to keep it a secret, and then their social media manager goes and posts a photo of Austin warming up backstage 5 minutes before his music hits. That person would be fired, and they would have to come up with a better way to manage their social media. In effect, that's what using the internet without ExpressVPN would be like. You may think you've got all your bases covered and you're protecting yourself, but all it takes is one mistake, and it would be a mistake not to be using ExpressVPN. Internet service providers, they know every single website you visit. ISPs, they can then sell this information to ad companies and tech giants who then use your data to target you. You know this sort of thing has to be going on. We've all been targeted by ads that make you go, "Hey, wait a minute. How the hell did they know that I was just browsing around Amazon for that yesterday?" Right? Eerie, isn't it? This is why you need a VPN. With ExpressVPN, it creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet, so your online activity cannot be seen by any prying eyes. Just open the app, tap one button, and you're protected. It works on phones, laptops, even routers, so everyone who shares your Wi-Fi can be protected. It's also rated number one by The Verge. And CNET just ranked it as the best overall VPN. That's why I use ExpressVPN. I have the app installed on my phone and my laptop. And the two things I love most about it are how easy it is to use and the speed. I haven't suffered any lag. I haven't noticed any kind of performance dip when it comes to streaming video or other things I may be doing, which is important to me. I understand how important a VPN can be, but I don't want to use one if I have to sacrifice performance. And I haven't had any issues there. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster today. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. We had a triple threat match. Triple threat match here for the FTW title, the For the World title, as Chris Jericho is now calling it, with the Learning Tree. Chris Jericho defending against Hook and Katsuyori Shibata. Hook and Shibata briefly took turns just kicking Jericho's ass to start this match. Hook hit a released German on Shibata before setting up a table at ringside. He wanted a T-bone off the apron on Jericho, but Shibata booted both men to the floor. Jericho brought a bag out from under the ring, and they want you to think it's going to be thumbtacks, or they want you to think it's going to be hockey pucks like it was a few weeks ago. It wasn't tacks, and it wasn't hockey pucks. It was dice. Dozens and dozens of dice strewn all over the mat, because we're in Las Vegas, of course. Jericho was then promptly suplexed onto the dice that he himself brought into the ring. Then Hook and Shibata took turns suplexing each other onto the dice. They both retrieved kendo sticks from under the ring, but Jericho reappeared with one of his own. Hook and Shibata no-sold Jericho's shots and then lit him up. Shibata brought a table into the ring. Jericho got set up on top of the table as Shibata tried for an avalanche. Now what he was trying for here was an avalanche Death Valley driver. Jericho's laying there. He's looking up. He's probably thinking, oh, fuck, don't hurt me. And he's looking up at this, and Shibata is taking forever. Now, I don't know if he was having second thoughts. I don't know if he just couldn't get Hook in the right position. And, you know, you don't want to launch the guy and hurt him or hurt your opponent or hurt yourself. So he's trying to get him, and it's just taking forever. And then finally, he takes him over for the avalanche move. And Hook nearly, he overshot the target, basically. And Hook looked like he nearly landed on his head. The table didn't break, it just kind of fell over, so Jericho fell over, and Jericho ended up after this setting the table up against the turnbuckles in the corner, and Shibata put him through the table. So they were determined to break the table, and they ultimately did, but thankfully nobody got killed on that spot. Shibata shot a double leg on Jericho and applied a Muda Lock, while also simultaneously having an ankle lock on Hook. And with the dice still scattered all over the ring, Jericho still hit a codebreaker on Hook for two. Hook dodged the Judas effect and sank in Red Rum, but Big Bill appeared, and he hit an elbow to break it up. Triple threat match, so no disqualifications in a triple threat match. Bill brought Hook to the apron. And remember, there was a table early in this match that was set up in front of the announcers outside the ring. That table is still there. Bill and Hook are out on the apron, and Bill is going to attempt to chokeslam this kid through the table. Hook instead hits a T-bone off the apron and puts Big Bill through the table, who was very lucky that he did not get impaled by one of the table legs. But, you see this big guy go sailing through the air. It was a big spot. Back inside, Shibata locked in a figure four on Jericho, but Hook applied Red Rum at the same time. Suddenly, a masked man hit the ring, and he placed a trash can over Shibata before hitting a running senton onto him and the trash can. Hook got taken out with the Judas effect, and the masked man, the camera zoned in on him, and the masked man pulls the mask off to reveal Brian Keith. Womp womp. It was the bounty hunter, Brian Keith, underneath the mask, the same Brian Keith who was on the losing end of the Eliminator three-way on Wednesday. He lost to Hook and Shibata. That sent Hook and Shibata into this match. There was absolutely, by the way, no reason for Brian Keith to be hiding behind a mask. Like, I can understand it if you have a big reveal, like it's a big name, or somebody's coming back from an injury, and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe this person is here. I can't believe they're back, right? But in this case, there was no reason to put a mask on this guy. And then when he pulled it off, it's like, oh. So I don't understand the logic behind that, but they wanted to go for a dramatic effect, I guess, and it just didn't really work. So Jericho ended up pinning Shibata, who was still inside the trash can when he pinned him, to win the match and retain the title. And I knew it. I knew it as soon as they added Shibata to the match and they made it a three-way. I changed my prediction. And I said Jericho's going to win. Remember when I did the predictions? I said, as soon as they added Shibata, that was it. I knew Jericho was going over. I knew they were going to keep this going. And Jericho was going to hold on to the FTW title. And that's exactly what they did. I did not care for this match. You know, I guess Jericho has hired himself a bounty hunter. He's Jericho's latest recruit under the learning tree. In the long run, it will not make a lick of difference. It did not make a difference for anybody else in the inner circle. It did not make a lick of difference for anybody else long term. Make a difference for anybody in the Jericho Appreciation Society. We've already been down this road with Jericho twice before. No stars were made. This will not be any different. More than making any new stars or getting anybody over, this is just it's a Jericho, you know, vanity thing, I guess. I mean, it's just to give him something to do and to keep him involved in some way. Because in theory, it's like, okay, Jericho, if he's going to be on these shows, I'd rather him be working with like younger talent, people he hasn't worked with before. If he must be on the show, I still think he should go away for a while. But does anybody honestly believe that at the end of all this, Big Bill is going to be better off for it? Brian Keith is going to be better off for it? No, of course not. It's something for Jericho to do. But on a show where we already had a lot of really violent, bloody, hardcore stuff coming up later on in the show, did we need this? No. No, we did not. Speaking of bloody, I know someone who loves blood. His name is Jon Moxley, and he was up next. The IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, not defending the title because it was a non-title match. It was an eliminator match against Konosuke Takeshita. Takeshita immediately zoned in on the heavily wrapped arm of Moxley, which Takeshita pilmanized on television the night before. Takeshita violently slammed Moxley down on the ring apron, just jerked him down shoulder first into the canvas. Callis then went over to Takeshita. He said, "I think his arm is broken." Takeshita then pinned Moxley's arm. You thought I was going to say something else there, right? You don't think it's that easy. Come on now. He pinned Moxley's arm in a chair, and he booted it against the railing. Moxley fought back with his good arm. Takeshita, though, no-sold and crumbled Moxley with a forearm. Brainbuster connected. Moxley started waking up, though, after absorbing multiple shots. Moxley sidestepped the charge into a cutter. Takeshita spun out of a pile driver into an arm breaker, but Moxley countered into a triangle. Takeshita hit a powerbomb into another arm bar, but Moxley got the ropes. Takeshita argued with the referee, which was long enough for Moxley to send him outside and then hit a dive. Back inside, Takeshita tried to charge. He ran into a King Kong lariat. Takeshita spun out of a paradigm shift, hit the strong zero into the wheelbarrow German, but as he went for the power drive knee, Moxley met him with a desperation paradigm shift. Takeshita did ultimately connect on the power drive knee. Moxley, though, kicked out, and Moxley dodged the home run forearm, sank in the bulldog choke, after which he wanted Death Rider. But the arm gave out, and Takeshita posted him and then hit the home run forearm, and then Takeshita hit a Death Rider on Moxley and spiked him for a very close near fall. Callis signaled for the end. Takeshita started throwing chairs in from underneath the ring. I mean, Don was directing traffic the entire time, telling him what to do. So Takeshita starts throwing chairs into the ring. Rick Knox proceeded to toss them out, but as his back was turned, it allowed Moxley to hit a curb stomp onto one of the chairs, followed by a Death Rider. And he pins Konosuke Takeshita to win the match. There will be no IWGP Championship match for Konosuke Takeshita. Thanks for coming. The story the announcers told is that Don Callis cost Takeshita the match because he kept calling plays, and had he not tried to retrieve those chairs at the end, he would have won the match. Right? That's what they were trying to get over here. You know, it's bad enough that he lost in an eliminator match. Couldn't even win the right to become number one contender, but he lost to a one-armed man. That just makes it that much worse. Now, I have to think that there were political implications here, there were political considerations to be made, and New Japan didn't want their IWGP champion to be pinned at all. You know, not unless the time comes that he's ready to lose the title. So that may have been why they couldn't have Takeshita go over on Moxley, but then it also begs the question of why even do the match in the first place. They're heading into Forbidden Door, so I'm sure New Japan is very sensitive to what Moxley is going to be doing, who he's going to be facing. I know he's defending the title in a few weeks against Evil. God for fucking bid, Evil wins the title. I don't think anybody wants to see that. Maybe Io Sky, but I don't know anybody else that does. So, yes, I'm sure there were probably political considerations involved here. And Takeshita, he otherwise looked great. I mean, it's not like he was booked like a pushover in this match. He always has great matches, but boy, they did this man absolutely no favors by putting him in this match, beating him, and him losing to a one-arm man. And now it's like, okay, so he lost, just like Hobbs did. Now, Hobbs got hurt, so I don't know what they would have had planned for Hobbs. Probably nothing. But he got hurt. Where are they going to go now with Takeshita? What does Takeshita do? Don Callis has the Callis family. Callis family, you know, seemingly Will Ospreay is still technically a part of the Callis family, or at least he's loosely associated with them. Kyle Fletcher is part of the family. Hobbs is out hurt. Takeshita's in there now, but he's basically directionless at this point. It doesn't seem like they have any obvious direction for him, unless the announcer saying what they said at the end is an indication that Takeshita may be soon leaving the Callis family. I don't know. I don't think this did him any favors at all. I really don't. We had a barbed wire steel cage match for the TNT Championship with Adam Copeland defending against Malakai Black, a G.S. Hudson. It's good to see you, my friend. And everybody else here, all 1,300 plus joining me here on Memorial Day weekend. It is still technically Memorial Day weekend, even though it is Monday. I hope you guys are off from work or school or whatever you would normally be doing on a Monday. There was barbed wire wrapped around different parts of the cage and all around the top of the cage. South of Heaven by Slayer played Copeland out to the ring as he rose up from the stage, surrounded by a ring of fire, and the words "The Brood" were shown on the big screen. A little, well, obviously here an homage to the old Brood entrance. So both men swung chairs right away. Black wanted the end kick. I wanted the end this pay-per-view, but he wanted the end kick, but Copeland dodged and grabbed some barbed wire. Black tried to powerbomb him out of the corner, but Copeland raked the barbed wire across his face, and Malakai was already bleeding. We were but a few short minutes into this match, and already the blood is flowing, which you had to know. I mean, it's a barbed wire cage match. You knew that these men were going to bleed. Copeland charged for a corner spear, but landed in the ropes, had his legs swept, and came face first down onto the barbed wire, which opened him up as well. So now we got double juice. Black grabbed a barbed wire bat that was hanging on the cage and he raked it across Copeland's head before trying a concerto with the bat. But Copeland dodged and smacked Black in the ribs with it. Copeland returned the favor and raked the bat across Malakai's head before placing him on a table. Copeland climbed the ropes, but Black kicked the legs out and crotched him, and then he managed a sunset flip powerbomb through the table. The end kick missed for a third time, this time with Copeland countering into a spear for two. Copeland set up Black on another table in the ring, and this time he wrapped him and the table in barbed wire. So Malakai Black is trapped. He's flat on the table. And then came the "Why would you do that?" award of the night. Now, if you would have told me coming into this show, who do you think you're going to award the "Why did you do that" award to on this pay-per-view, without hesitation, I would have said Darby Allin. That's what I would have said. I wouldn't have even had to think about it. I would have said, of course, it's going to be Darby Allin. Darby Allin is going to win the award. And you would think he would be a shoo-in, but in fact, that was not the case. This would be the equivalent of Pauly Shore beating out Marlon Brando for the Oscar. Like, it would just never happen. You wouldn't even conceive of it. But That's what we had here. Copeland climbs to the very top of the cage. And he takes his time looking down, no doubt contemplating the very stupid thing that he is about to do. And honestly, he should know better. He just sat down for an interview, and a great interview that he did with Chris Van Vliet. And they talked about a whole range of different topics and subjects. Among them, Chris brought up the spot in the cage match back in 2005 with Edge and Matt Hardy at Unforgiven, where Matt did a diving leg drop from the top of the cage and talked about how Matt really messed himself up. He messed up his hips and everything. And still to this day, he doesn't quite walk the same way. I mean, he really fucked himself up on that. So it's not like Copeland is oblivious to the risks involved in doing a stunt like that from very high up, you know, at the top of the cage. Look, this is a guy in Adam Copeland who tore his Achilles. He ruptured his Achilles tendon doing a leapfrog in a match. Now he's standing all the way up there on top of this cage. And I guess once he was up there, that's it. Like, you're committed to it. He's not going to climb down, you know. Maybe if you're a heel, you want to get some heat and get booed out of the building, I guess you could do that. But you're not going to climb to the very top of the cage and then, you know, fucking climb down. So now you're up there. Now you've committed yourself to it. And so he jumped. And he jumped from what had to be a good 15 feet in the air, maybe more. And it looked like he almost hesitated in midair. Like, as he jumped and he came off the top of the cage, like he realized, oh, shit. I shouldn't be doing this, and if I splash this man or I do a regular diving elbow drop, I'm going to sever organs in my body because I have wrapped this man and this table in barbed wire. I may saw myself in half, so I can't come straight down on this man, so what I'll do then is I'll come straight down on my fucking ankles. That's what I'll do. And so down comes Adam Copeland from high above. And I said this on Twitter. I said, you know, Randy Savage did the same thing in WCW. And it was very dumb then. But Randy Savage did the same thing in WCW off that rickety-ass cage. And he blew out both of his knees. And he was 6 years younger than Adam Copeland was here. Now, he was also a hell of a lot more roided up. And you know, I'm sure that didn't help and had knee issues. But blew out both of his knees, and arguably was never the same again. And he was 6 years younger than Copeland is here at the age of 50. On the way down, he did stick his arm out, and he did put black through the table, but it was more like an elbow fall than an elbow drop, I would say. And after a delayed cover, Malachi, it wasn't even the finish, of course. These things are never the finish. And Malachi Black, after a delayed cover, kicked out at two. And so I have to pause here and say this, because I said I got a lot of dumb comments from people, you know, on social media about some other stuff. But to all the weirdos who tweeted me last night and tweeted me this morning to tell me, why do you care about what other people do with their bodies? It's weird. The man is a grown adult. He can do whatever he wants. Why do you care? Why is it your business to comment and to talk about it? It's not your knees. You shouldn't tell him what to do. This is what I do. I sit here and I talk about pro wrestling. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And I comment on these shows and I comment and I give my thoughts and I opine. This man is not going to give you a hand job, no matter how many times you may try to kiss his ass. I mean, you know, for God's sake. I was just amazed. I was amazed by all of the stupidity that I saw. It's just wild how many of these freakazoids there are out there. All right? I promise you, it's almost feeding time, okay? Put the pacifier in your mouth. Your mother is going to squeeze one out, and you'll eat very soon. You're probably very hangry. I understand that right now, okay? But let the adults do their thing, put the pacifier back in, and you'll eat soon, and then you can go to sleep. Let me do what I do. I don't need to be lectured by people about, oh, you can't comment on that. What is it your business to comment on that? How dare you comment on that? You people are fucking weird as shit. You know that? You really are. You really need some psychological help. I can't give that help to you. I can't help you out. I'm sorry. There isn't much I can do for you. Holy shit. Anyway, Copeland charged for a spear. Black finally hit the end, only for Copeland to kick out of his finish. Black pulled out a spool of barbed wire, and he tried to stab Copeland with it, but was unsuccessful. Copeland was placed up against the cage door. Black kicked him through it hard enough that it broke the lock off the door, and Copeland went tumbling outside the cage to the floor. At first, I thought the match was over, and then I realized this isn't WWE with that dumb escape the cage finish. So the match continued. So they end up outside the cage, and as Black went out after him, Copeland fired off a desperation spear. Both men were down. Here come Brody King and Buddy Matthews, the other members of the House of Black. They stand beside Malachi, and then they switch to the other side, and they stand beside Adam Copeland. Malachi is sitting on the ground, and he can't believe it, right? And everybody's going nuts for this, right? They think, oh my God, we're going from the House of Black to the House of Cope. More like the House of Nope. It was all a ruse. And Buddy and Brody beat the hell out of Copeland. Brody just wiped him out with a lariat. Everyone went back to the ring. Black placed Copeland's wedding ring around his neck, the same wedding ring that he stole from him the other week. Put the wedding ring around his neck. Copeland had a crown of barbed wire placed upon his head. When the light suddenly went red, and the lights began to flicker. And that's when Gangrel came up from underneath the ring. Gangrel, the ageless wonder. I think this man is really a vampire. Because he didn't really look much. I mean, he's a little older in the face, but for the most part, he looked exactly the same. He had the fangs and everything. Got a nice reaction. So he doled out impaler DDTs to Brody King and Buddy Matthews, but then he got dropped by the end by Malachi Black. Copeland then speared Malachi, and then he wrapped the barbed wire around Malachi's face, and he trapped him in the crossface until Black, well, faded to black. And the referee called for the bell. Adam Copeland retains the TNT Championship in a violent, bloody war. Malachi Black, this whole story was that Malachi Black wanted to bring the dark side back out of Adam Copeland. He knew it was buried deep within, and he wanted to help bring it out of him. And he got the dark side of Adam Copeland, who ripped the wedding ring from Malachi's neck, his wedding ring from Malachi's neck. And what was very noticeable here is that he was limping very badly. He could not put any weight on that leg. So he posed with Gangrel, hobbled over to hug him, and Gangrel helped him to the back. I can't say that this was sicker or more violent than the Texas death match that we got with Swerve and Hangman at Full Gear, because it wasn't. But this is up there among the most violent matches and bloody matches in AEW history. And we had a bloodbath on Wednesday, right? A literal bloodbath in the ring on Wednesday, the old bloodbath that we used to see. And we had a brood entrance tonight. And so the only thing missing was Gangrel. And so I was happy. I was happy that he got his cameo. Because Copeland had inadvertently fucked him out of a spot with AEW many years ago. If you don't know that story, and again, there was no malice involved. You know, it's not like Copeland did it on purpose. But a few years ago, I think back in 2021, I want to say, Gangrel was scheduled to make an appearance on Dynamite. And he was very excited, and everything was, you know, in motion. And he was going to, I forgot what he was going to do, but he was going to be on the show. And then that was the year at SummerSlam where Edge came out and did the old brood entrance before his match with Seth Rollins. And at that point, AEW got back to him and said, yeah, we're not doing this. So Gangrel got screwed out of a cameo on AEW television. And who knows, it might have been a one-off, or maybe it would have led to something, but we'll never know. And so when he told Copeland this, Copeland was very upset and apologized to him. And I didn't know, you know, we had been working on that entrance for a few months. And whatever, Gangrel's like, yeah, whatever, dude, it's not your fault. So I was happy because I am sure that this was Copeland's idea. I am sure that Copeland was fighting to do something with him and get him on the show in some way. And I'm glad that he was able to do it. And that was kind of like his little make good there. And we got a, well, we got a Brood reunion. But look, I mean, the other member of the Brood was in the building. He just wasn't a part of the crew here. We only got 2/3 of the Brood. So at some point, I think at least one more time, we got to get the band back together and get Christian and Copeland and Gangrel for at least one more entrance. So the entire Brood was there, funny enough. How many years later? 25 years later? But we only got 2/3 here in this segment. I was not surprised that Adam Copeland went over. That's why I had him in my predictions. This never felt to me like they were fully invested in doing a title change and putting the belt on Malakai Black. And I do wonder, personally, my thought, my opinion, I do wonder if Tony Khan thinks or feels or knows that Malakai is gone. Whenever his contract is up, whenever that may be, it's the Ricky Starks thing where, why am I going to push you? Why am I going to put a belt on you? Why am I going to invest all this television time in you and make you a champion in my company if I think that you may not be here soon? Did that factor into things? I don't know. Because my opinion, I do think that he will be headed back to WWE when he's free and clear to do so. Just how I feel. But I think that Jack Perry, I think it's just inevitable that Jack Perry is probably going to be the one to take that TNT title away from Copeland. And I also think that, look, if you're trying to push Jack Perry, which they very clearly are, based on what they did in the main event tonight, or last night, on this show, then you've got to go all the way. And that TNT title should be reserved then for someone like him. Copeland should be losing it to someone like him. Copeland should not be losing it back to Christian. He should not be losing it to another big former WWE guy. You want to put over some of these newer guys, these younger guys, these homegrown guys. Perry right now is a big part of the Elite and the Elite story that's going on. I only hope that if that's the case, that Copeland can actually drop it to him and that we don't see Jack Perry win the TNT title in a battle royal or a tournament because Copeland blew out his ACL. I've been looking for updates on him. Tony Khan was asked about him at the scrum last night and he didn't say, no, he's okay. You know, he's just a little banged up. He did say he's banged up, but he was like, knock on wood. Hopefully, we're all hoping for the best. You know, we're all hoping he's okay. I mean, that didn't exactly inspire a lot of confidence there. So I don't know what the latest update is on him, but hopefully he'll be all right. But the way he was limping there at the end, that did not look good. We had Mercedes Moné in her AEW in-ring debut 1 year, over a year, after she last wrestled, challenging Willow Nightingale for the TBS Championship. Before Mercedes' entrance, there was a video that talked about believing in yourself and being the change that you want to see, as they showed various historic female figures. Amelia Earhart was in there. Then a drum line came out wearing flashing lights, and they played on stage, and they played her out. Along with, I believe I saw some Vegas showgirls in there, I do believe. Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander, they carried out a huge friendship bracelet for Willow's entrance. So Mercedes suckered Willow into a chase, hit a step-up knee, and we had Moné with multiple arm drags. Willow was no-selling some strikes. She stopped a third arm drag attempt and then waffled Mercedes. Both women missed dives to the floor as Nightingale dodged a baseball slide and hit a gut-wrench powerbomb on the edge of the ring. Back inside, Nightingale wanted an avalanche powerbomb, but Moné swept the legs and shot-blocked the leg. Backstabber got a near fall for Mercedes as Willow countered with an abdominal stretch into an ankle lock, and so Moné rolled out, charged, but Willow absolutely launched her with a pounce. That was great. They showed it on replay here. She went flying through the air. So that was a great spot. Both ladies scaled the ropes and Moné slipped out into a powerbomb for two. Nightingale rolled to the apron and Mercedes tried a double stomp, but Willow moved and hit a knee breaker on the edge of the ring. There was an inverted cloverleaf into a giant swing for a great visual as Willow hit a DVD into the corner, but then missed the follow-up senton. Mercedes hit a Meteora off the second rope for two. Willow rolled outside where Mercedes hit a second Meteora. Chris Statlander was out there cheering Willow on, and she got shoved in the process. And Stokely Hathaway argued with Aubrey Edwards about this, got up on the apron, Willow, meanwhile, hit a doctor bomb. That's her finish. And she had the visual pin on Mercedes. But her fucking manager has the referee's attention. And Willow is just sitting there going, what the hell's going on here? So he cost her her title, in effect, because she should have had the three count, but there was no referee. And by the time Aubrey made her way back over, Monet kicked out. Willow went for another doctor bomb, but Mercedes countered into her old bank statement finish. Willow eventually got to the ropes to break the hold. Mercedes went up the ropes, got cut off by Willow, who joined her on the ropes, only to be shoved to the mat. Monet was able to hoist Willow up on her back and hit her moneymaker finish, or her Monet maker, whatever she calls it. The gory bomb into the face plant, I guess, and then got the three count to become the new TBS champion. After the match, in the ring, Hathaway threw a tantrum until Statlander shoved him down on his ass, helped Willow, her best friend, out of the ring, and as she's helping Willow up the ramp, they started to make their way up the ramp when Statlander pulled a Kevin Owens on Sami Zayn on Owens' very first night in the company, very first night in NXT, and she shoved Willow down hard backwards to the ground. Hathaway sat in the ring, and he's sitting there with a big smile on his face. And Statlander hit Willow with a discus lariat on the floor, stood over her, and posed with Stokely, who came over. I thought we were going to get the Statlander turn in Dynasty, or even earlier than that. They've been teasing it for a while. There's been hints of it for a while now, so wasn't a surprise to see Statlander go heel. We got it, you know, last night instead. The question now, I guess, is, was Chris Statlander the mystery person who attacked Mercedes in that backstage segment all those many weeks ago? I don't know. We may never know. We may never know. It may end up as one of those forgotten angles I said on the podcast. It could be the new White Hummer from WCW. One would think that she may have been the one behind it, but at least Willow now has someone to feud with, because she's no longer the TBS champion, and you would hope that they have something else for her, keep her in the mix, keep her visible on TV, and now she's got a feud with Chris Statlander. Now, they may relegate it to Rampage, hopefully not, but at least that gives her something to do. I wish that Willow was able to have a longer run. I think she's great. I don't understand some of the Willow Nightingale hate, and there is Willow Nightingale hate. I saw a little bit of it last night. And not everybody, you don't have to like the same people that everybody else likes, but like, there are some people who just don't think she's good. They don't think she's a good wrestler, or she's reckless or whatever. I don't see that. And I think she's a very good performer, and she's got a great personality, and she's a star for them in that division. And hopefully she will not be forgotten. But there was no way that Tony Khan was not putting this title on Mercedes once the title match was announced. And you could talk about how, why was Mercedes getting a title shot in her very first match? It's a valid criticism. Why indeed? But putting that aside, that's neither here nor there at this point. Once the match was made official, you are not going to beat Mercedes in her very first match. It's just not going to happen. So you had to know coming in that the title was going to change hands. At least Willow got a month. I wish it were longer, but it's better than nothing. I actually think they protected her pretty decently by at least giving her that visual pin, because she had the match won. Were it not for Stokely up on the apron, she theoretically would have won the match and kept the belt. So they protected her with that visual pin. Not only did they protect her with the visual pin, but they gave her a logical reason to want an immediate rematch. And I'm hoping we will get a rematch. Now, yes, that means that Willow will lose again, probably with some shenanigans from Statlander and Stokely. But I would like to see them run it back one more time. I thought this was a hell of a match. So if they want to do it again, let's do it again. Let's run it back on TV in the next few weeks. Because she's got a logical argument to make that, look, I had this match won. I had her dead to rights were it not for him getting involved. So I don't think we've seen the last of these two. As far as Mercedes goes, you know, for someone who missed a year of her career due to a pretty significant injury, significant enough that she claims that she was told by her doctors, you'll never come back. You'll never come back to the ring, which makes for a great story. And again, maybe they did tell her that, I don't know, but she looked great in the ring. I didn't know what to expect, if there would be a lot of ring. I mean, look, there were a few, maybe a couple clunky spots in there, but I thought she looked great. I thought Willow looked great last night. This is what I've been waiting to see. You know, in the ring is where she shines. I've not been impressed by any of the promo segments she's been a part of. I thought the contract signing a few weeks ago was very good. But the other stuff that Mercedes has been doing over the last couple of months is just fucking garbage. It hasn't been good. I've been waiting to get her back in the ring. This is what I wanted to see. And I thought that she delivered. I thought she had a great performance. I still think putting someone like Camille, who I think is coming in, I think putting a bodyguard in her corner is something that would make sense. I still would like to see them do that. It's a way to not only put more heat on Mercedes, but you can help elevate somebody else, you know, eventually when the eventual split goes down. Maybe we'll still get it. We'll see. But this was excellent. I thought both the women shined here. Both women's matches on the main card on this show, I thought were top-notch quality stuff. And then we had our second of what they billed as three main events here on this show. Hey, Alex with the Judgment Day interruption here. $32 super chat from Alex. Alex, I hope you are having a great Memorial Day. I will agree with some people in the chat, though. Her finish, I'm not a fan of. Mercedes' new finish. I just think that it has to be hit on someone who is probably smaller. And Mercedes is herself not the biggest person in that division. So it really depends, I think, on the opponent and how the opponent takes the move. It could look good, but a lot of times it just doesn't look that great. It looks clunky. So I will give you that. I will agree. I don't think that's a great finish. But we had Swerve Strickland, his first pay-per-view as the AEW World Champion. Does not headline, but he goes on second to last against Christian Cage. Swerve got the special video package treatment, just like Mercedes did before her match, before his entrance here, which saw Prince Nana walk out. He was clanking some empty beer bottles together, saying, "Swerve, come out to play," like in the movie The Warriors. And Strickland comes out. He walks out with gear that was inspired by the film. A lot of stalling early on. Strickland wanted a submission hold. Cage bailed to the outside to regroup. Cage suckered him into trying a dive to the floor, where he sidestepped Swerve. And Swerve crashed into the barricade. Back inside, Christian kept Strickland grounded as Nick Wayne got a cheap shot in. Swerve pulled Cage's turtleneck over his head and hit a neck breaker through the ropes. Taz said that Cage looked like Kenny from South Park, while Tony Schiavone made a Cornholio reference. Holy 90s here, man. Well, actually, the Warriors. I mean, that goes back even earlier than that. We had a Warriors reference here. We had South Park. I guess South Park is still on. And Beavis and Butthead, I think, is still on, right? They brought it back. Didn't they bring it back, I think, on Paramount Plus? What's old is new again. I just talked on the show yesterday about how I just watched the trailers for Beetlejuice and Beverly Hills Cop. You know, as an 80s guy, I love this shit, but it's also kind of weird to be talking about all this old stuff here. I don't know what it says about the new stuff. Anyway, as this was happening, Strickland connected on a Fosbury flop outside. Strickland then winked over at Mother Wayne. I mean, can you blame the guy? But then he missed the house call, allowing Cage to sink in a sharpshooter. Strickland fought out, but both men bonked heads. Mother Wayne grabbed the AEW title belt, but Prince Nana took it away from her. And Nick then showed the referee, hey, look, he's got the belt, and Nana got caught red-handed. And the referee ejected Prince Nana from ringside. Cage threw Strickland to the floor, took the referee, as Killswitch and Nick attacked. Killswitch tried a headbutt, but he hit Christian by accident. Nick got dropped with a back body drop to the floor as Christian dodged a Swerve stomp in the ring and hit a spear for two. Nick took the referee as Killswitch was about to interfere yet again, but the referee caught him and he ejected the entire patriarchy. So Swerve connected on a rolling flatliner for two. Christian rolled outside, tried to set up the ring steps, but Swerve was there waiting for him. Cage raked the eyes, wanted a powerbomb off the apron, but Strickland caved his chest in instead with a double stomp. Retro has always been cool. Retro is cool, man. I tell you, man, I got my Miyu Mini I'm playing old fucking Nintendo games, Genesis games. Can't beat the classics. So Strickland tried a spear through the ropes. Cage sidestepped him, and Strickland flew through the ropes, and he smacked the steps instead. It's okay, though, because his face broke the fall. Cage pulled at the turnbuckle pad, which drew the attention of the referee. Meanwhile, Nick Wayne returned, and he hit Swerve with a cutter and then rolled him back inside. Cage hit his kill switch finish, and that was a great near fall that he got out of that. So Prince Nana comes back out with a pipe in his hand, and he chases Nick Wayne over the barricade and through the crowd. Cage cleared off the Spanish announce desk and pulled Swerve on top of it. Christian went for kill switch, but Swerve countered into a standing double stomp on the table, and the table did not break. Or at least it did not collapse. Both men beat the count back inside. Cage went for another spear. Strickland, though, hit a house call out of midair, which looked fantastic. This led to a Swerve stomp and one final house call kick for the win. And Swerve retains. It started slow, and it built nicely to where the crowd was fully behind Swerve here at the very end and popped big for the finish. I mean, they were behind Swerve the entire time, but they were loud. They were up for him here at the end. Christian was, I thought, a fine first pay-per-view challenge for Swerve on a show where nothing was going to be able to follow Anarchy in the Arena. And you see what they did in that main event. And you look at the past Anarchy in the Arena matches that they've done. It has to close the show. Just all of the pure insanity of it. You can't follow that with anything. So Swerve as the defending champion, it's not ideal for him to not be in the main event, but they had no choice, you know, once they announced Anarchy in the Arena. And so, no, I mean, his main event, they called it a triple main event. I mean, that's nice and all, but, you know, the main event of the show was not this match. It was Anarchy in the Arena. Christian, though, made for a fine first opponent. Now we look ahead to Dynamite this Wednesday. They have already announced a Casino Gauntlet match, and the winner of this Casino Gauntlet match is going to be the number one contender for the AEW World title at Forbidden Door. Hiroshi Tanahashi was at the show last night. It was actually funny because Tony Khan, when he came out during the press scrum, brought Tanahashi with him, Tanahashi-san. And they came out, and Tanahashi sat there, and basically, I mean, barely anybody asked him any questions. And he couldn't understand some of them anyway, but he just sat there. So as they would parade out, here comes Timeless Tony Storm doing her shtick, here comes Will Ospreay and Swerve, and, you know, person after person. Tanahashi is just kind of sitting there chilling. It's like, he's probably thinking, what am I doing here? You know, why do I need to be here? Anyway, Tanahashi was in town because Tanahashi was a surprise partner for Daniel Garcia and Claudio on Collision Saturday night against Lance Archer and the Righteous, which means he's still in town. And I'm thinking, and I'm not saying that this is what I want to see. I don't want to see this. But I think that we are going to be in for a Tanahashi win in the Casino Gauntlet on Wednesday, and we may be getting Swerve and Tanahashi at Forbidden Door for the AEW World title. Tanahashi has a win over Swerve Strickland on Collision last year. So there's a little bit of history there. Tanahashi has also challenged for the AEW World Championship at the first two Forbidden Door shows. He wrestled Jon Moxley for the interim title. He wrestled MJF. So this would be his third straight Forbidden Door challenging for that AEW World title. You don't think it's very possible that we may not end up with Tanahashi against Swerve? I hope that's not the match. That's not the opponent that I want for Swerve at Forbidden Door. But as far as the Casino Gauntlet, we don't know who's in it. If I had to make a prediction, that's my prediction. I hope I'm wrong. There were people telling me, oh, well, it should be Shingo Takagi. Shingo Takagi and Naito, they're at a New Japan show on Thursday in Tokyo. So that would be one hell of a turnaround. It ain't going to be possible. It ain't going to be possible unless they pull them from the show. It's just logistically not going to be possible for it to be Shingo Takagi. I'm sorry to say, because Shingo and Swerve would be a great match. But even Shingo and Swerve, and I said this yesterday on the podcast, it's not even a matter of who the better opponent is, who's going to give him the best match. It shouldn't be about, well, who's going to give him the best match. Swerve needs to be involved in something at a high level story-wise. to go another month and just, you know, promote Forbidden Door with Swerve against the New Japan guy who won't even be on TV on most weeks, that doesn't do it for me. And Swerve should be doing more than that in the position that he is in. And I fear that what they risk doing, if that happens, and all the focus is on the Elite, and now all the focus is on MJF being back, is that Swerve ends up getting lost in the mix. And I don't want that to happen. You know, I just don't see how that does him any good. But we'll see. They have not made any of the announcements about who is going to be in the match yet, so we'll see. But that's where I'm leaning. And in the main event of this show, finally, it was midnight last night, and we came upon our main event. With the Elite, the Young Bucks, Jack Perry, and Kazuchika Okada taking on FTR. We had FTR bald and FTR hair. We had Brian Danielson, and we had Darby Allin with his gimpy foot and his broken nose, taking the spot left behind by Eddie Kingston when he broke his leg and tore his MCL and tore his... I mean, basically, his leg exploded a few weeks ago. So Darby Allin was like, I'll step in, as he limped his way all the way to Las Vegas. Justin Roberts did the introductions and introduced us to, as he called it, the upcoming shit show. The Elite were just about finished with their entrances when Danielson and FTR attacked Jack Perry. Darby Allin ran out wearing a face mask with thumbtacks on it. Because, of course, it's Darby. And his music continued to play, as it usually does. That's the gimmick with the Anarchy in the Arena matches. I was wondering, now, what I said was, I was hoping that Tony Khan would be willing to pay for Final Countdown, and they would loop Final Countdown a few times, but I said it'd probably be Darby's music. So it was Darby's music, and then eventually Matt Jackson took the mic, and he demanded they cut Darby's terrible music and play their entrance theme instead. Danielson attacked, and then he told the production people to turn that shit off and play the greatest song in the history of wrestling. And Final Countdown, his legendary theme, began to play over the PA system. The crowd went nuts. Money well spent. Unless, of course, Tony has to turn around and cut another 10 people. Then it's not money well spent. But I was very happy to hear Final Countdown again. Matthew and Dax, Okada and Danielson, Darby and Perry, Nick and Cash, they all paired off in different parts of the arena as Harwood smashed beer and a trash can over Matthew's head. Darby flew off the balcony onto a pile of guys down below with a coffin drop, which the cameras missed. The visual, by the way, Brian Danielson standing in the middle of the crowd with his song playing, with Final Countdown playing, and everybody in the building doing the yes chant, throwing their fingers up in the air, was a fantastic visual. Matthew screamed at the cameraman to cut the music because that's costing them $200,000 every time the song loops. Which may be a shoot, I don't know, but they cut off the music. That was it for the music. Jack Perry and Darby Allin, they fight out of the arena to the back while everybody else fights around ringside, including Okada, who had a sign in his hand that said Rainmaker Drive on it before he got a running start and he did his charging dive over the barricade onto Danielson in the crowd. So now we go to the back with Jack and Darby. And Darby throws Jack Perry into a random tub of ice water that just so happens to be sitting there, and he tries to drown this man. He holds him under the water, and he is attempting to murder Jack Perry, who is able to finally come up above water. Perry smashes him with a pipe. Now they're venturing over into the parking garage. We cut back live to the arena. The Bucks hit the shatter machine on Harwood for a two count. Danielson tried to dive onto Okada outside, but ate a chair shot in midair that was very safe, to the point where it looked bad. We cut back to the outside, and what do we see in the parking lot area, in the parking garage area? What do we cut back to? We see a small bus with the word scapegoat spray painted across the side of it, crashing through a pile of debris. As Excalibur on commentary wonders if Darby Allin was in the pile. Jack Perry was driving that thing like a New York City bus driver. So he attempted to murder Darby Allin, who does a pretty good job of trying to murder himself, and somehow he still lives. But that was what they left us with. Back to the ring. From the chair shot earlier, Danielson now is bleeding. Harwood is bleeding, although I didn't see how. Okada faked the Rainmaker pose and he flipped the crowd off instead. He hit Wheeler with a picture-perfect dropkick at a tombstone. Eventually, here comes Darby Allin. And Darby Allin, back from the dead after being hit by a bus for the second time in less than a month, stumbling down the aisle as Okada goes right after the ankle. Darby fights back with a code red for two. The Bucks trip him up and hit a double powerbomb through chairs. The Bucks now drag Darby back up the ramp. They place him on the elevator platform that they use to make their entrance, the Cody Vader. Okay, they place him on the elevator and they tell somebody, whoever is controlling it, to lower him. And then we see Darby like he's being lowered into his grave. Danielson now is all by himself. Nicholas sends him flying off the stage, and it's not a big drop, but throws him off the stage. The Bucks end up hitting Danielson with a Tony Khan driver on top of one of the giant poker chips from the set. Wheeler sets up a table. Okada, though, appears, hits a DDT, sets Wheeler up. Nicholas and Okada then hit double dives through tables onto both members of FTR. So now Jack Perry, the last time we saw Jack Perry, he had just driven the bus into this pile of debris. And when the cameraman rushed over to the bus to peer inside, Jack Perry looked like he was drunk or asleep at the wheel. He was keeled over. I don't know what was going on there. I guess he knocked himself loopy. So now Jack Perry appears once again. He is soaked. Okay. You would think he is soaked from the water earlier when he was put in the ice tub. Although as it turned out, he was soaked, but it was with a different substance for a very different reason. So it was smart, actually, for them to do that ice water spot. He's in the back, and he is walking through the gorilla position. And he stops to grab Tony Khan. I said, oh, no. Don't tell me that Tony's taking a bump. Don't tell another bump. Or even worse, don't tell me we're getting the Eric Bischoff swerve. Now, I didn't think they would actually do it. Like, when they did the initial angle at Daly's place where they pile drove him, I was talking about the possibility that maybe they would pull a stunt like that. And I was like, I didn't think they would do it. But then I saw this and I'm like, oh, no. No, this is the last thing we need. So he grabs Tony Khan. Camera cuts away. Darby reappears on the stage with his flamethrower. And right as Jack Perry comes out through the tunnel with Tony Khan, and he throws him down, and Tony Khan goes rolling, rolling, rolling down the ramp. Perry does not see Darby and his flamethrower, and Darby sets fire to Jack Perry's legs, and his legs go up in flames, and he roasts, probably for a good 5 seconds, before the Bucks, they have fire extinguishers, and they put him out. Well, you know, the first Anarchy in the Arena, if you remember, iconic spot where he looks zombified. Eddie Kingston is coming back down to the ring with a giant gas can. All Darby did was, I mean, he saw that and said, well, I got to one-up him somehow, right? Eddie tried to set somebody on fire. So what I'll do, I'll actually go ahead and set somebody on fire. The only thing that surprised me isn't even that he set somebody on fire. It's the fact that he set somebody else on fire and not himself, because I kind of feel like he would have enjoyed that. So Darby now is taken to the ring by the Bucks, who rip off his thumbtack mask. Nicholas missed the 450 splash onto a garbage can when Darby moved. Okada missed a Rainmaker. Darby hit him with a low blow and a coffin drop, but the Bucks saved him. The Bucks call for a hook. Not hook, but a hook to be lowered from the ceiling. And now they hogtie Darby by his feet, so he's hanging upside down. FTR make the save with a shatter machine on Nicholas. Okada, though, breaks up the pin. Right as Dax was about to hit a pile driver on Okada, Matthew swung a chair, and it exploded. The old exploding chair. You know, I would love to know, by the way, I have to say, the Bucks are listening. I would love to know where the exploding chair comes from, where one can purchase an exploding chair. I can't wait to use it at the next family barbecue. I can't wait to see what happens when Aunt Mary sits down on the chair. Cranky old bitch. Meanwhile, Okada put a thumbtack sleeve over his arm. He hit a rainmaker with it on Cash Wheeler. Okada brought out some of the Bucks' new Ryback. Ryback. He brought out the Ryback pumps, the Reebok pumps. They have new Reebok pumps that they're very excited about. They're on sale today. And they have thumbtacks in the bottom of them. They raised Darby upside down in the air, and I was worried here. I was worried that they were going to do a repeat of the Jay Briscoe spot from Ring of Honor. If you remember when the Age of the Fall was formed, I think, is when they did that angle, and they hogtied Jay Briscoe, and they hung him upside down, and Jimmy Jacobs, I think he had his white, you know, jacket on, is standing underneath while the blood drips down on top of him. I was like, oh, we don't need to see this. So I was a little worried about that. Thankfully, they didn't do that. The Bucks proceed to hit him with super kicks like a pinata. Danielson rolled back in. Matthew accidentally struck his brother with a super kick with the tacks as Danielson grabbed one of the shoes and leveled them with it. Danielson hits the Busaiku knee with a chair for two. Okada made the save. Darby now, by this point, has been hanging upside down above the ring for a good 5 minutes. Okay. Bleeding and all the blood. Well, of course, all the blood is rushing to his head. Crowd is chanting, please help Darby. Nobody does. And the announcers claim that everybody is afraid for their jobs. They're fearful that if they get in there and they help, that the elite will fire them. Okada hit a rainmaker. The Bucks hit an EVP trigger. And then Jack Perry reappears and he hits the charging knee to pin Bryan Danielson to win Anarchy in the Arena for the Elite. And the show finally ended at 12:33 East Coast time. They went 30 minutes in this main event. When they hit the ring, it was midnight. Okay, so they went 30 minutes with this main event, did not even get going until the stroke of midnight. If you were looking for Anarchy, like legit Anarchy in the Arena, then that's what you got. You got Anarchy in the Arena. It lived up to its name. One of the wildest matches that you will ever see. Whether or not you enjoyed it is a matter of personal taste. Some people enjoy these types of matches. Some people don't. I enjoyed it for what it was. I knew what to expect coming in. I remember watching the first Anarchy in the Arena that they did, and I thought that it was wild fun. I had a lot of fun with it. Each year they do it. It's sort of the law of diminishing returns. The more you do something, it just doesn't have that same feel to it. But I enjoyed it for what it was. I mean, I thought there were some fun spots in there. There were some other spots that were just, you know, had to be shaking my head. But again, nothing was going to be able to follow this. So you had to close out the show with this. The Elite wins, of course, because you can't beat the Elite. You're going to keep this angle going. You got to keep them strong, right? You can't beat them now. That would be stupid. You beat them now, there's no heat. The whole point is to keep getting heat until one day they get their comeuppance. Today was not that day. Speaking of heat, Jack Perry. Jack Perry, after being set on fire, comes back and wins the match for his team. They are trying to get him over. They are trying to get him over, you know, as someone big, which is what they should be doing. I mean, look, if they've committed themselves, he's part of the Elite. This is their top angle in the company. They want to try to put as much heat on this guy as possible. Then this is what they should do. That should be one of the goals of this angle. Is to get Jack Perry over as a main eventer. Is Jack Perry going to get over as a main eventer? Maybe not. I don't know. I don't fault them for trying, though. They're trying. You know, he was a big part of this match. He beats Bryan Danielson and goes over on him here at the very end. And I think he should be next in line to challenge for the TNT Championship. Where the Elite goes from here, we will have to wait and see. Who their next target is going to be. Is it going to be Swerve? Is it going to be MJF? I don't know, but what I do know is they usually have a blood and guts match around this time of year. In about a month's time is when they usually have blood and guts. And it would be just complete overkill for them to do what they did before, which is have Anarchy in the Arena and then go to blood and guts and then have a stadium stampede match at Wembley Stadium. It's too much. It's too much. There's no need for that. I hope they don't do that. Got to let these things breathe. Especially Stadium Stampede and Anarchy in the Arena. They're basically the same fucking match. Yeah, well, at least Blood and Guts, you got two rings instead of one. So it's a little bit different. But overall, I thought it was a very good show. It was not my favorite of all these AEW pay-per-views. It was not their best. But I did think it was a very good show. It was overkill, though, having three different hardcore-type matches on the same card. But they got their biggest star back in the fold, and Tony Khan should be ecstatic about that. Now let's take a look at this Twitter poll that I put up last night. It already had a few thousand votes. What did you think of Double or Nothing with 2,600 votes and counting? 57.5% thumbs up for this show, 23% thumbs in the middle, and just shy of 20% thumbs down, 19.6%. You know, if it were me, it's definitely higher than a 57% show to me. I don't agree with that. But again, opinions are going to vary based on the hardcore stuff and the types of matches they had on the show. The booking is certainly questionable in some cases, especially on the Takeshita stuff. So I get that. I did think it was a little bit stronger than that, though. But you can vote. Cast your vote. Just because I felt that way doesn't mean that you do. So let your voices be heard. And don't forget to hit that like button. Smash that like button if you have not already done so. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. As promised, I will read through all of your messages here, and I do thank you. Not all of them are in this list, but let me just move up to where we will be starting from here. All right, let's go back in time, because I said we had some that came in last night, so I want to make sure I get those guys, including Jerome Eugenio. I didn't forget about you, brother. Said, we'll be listening to your review tomorrow. Staying up late is a young man's game. And Jerome is just finding out that there was no review, and there's a live review now. So, Jerome, I don't know if you're with us now or not, but thank you, brother, for the five. Ace of Mazda with the $9.99. Real fire, he says. Cry me a river. Dark Effect, who I know was with us, I think he may have ducked out, but Dark Effect, thank you for the $10. Cheers to the Iron Man of podcasters. A marathon of content this week. May you keep your sanity. It is hard, but with all the wrestling there is. You know, we had King of the Ring, obviously, on Saturday. Episode 863 went up. We had Double or Nothing last night. We're live here. We're going to be live again tonight after Raw. We've got TNT with JD tomorrow night. We got Dynamite on Wednesday, SmackDown on Friday. So it's a never-ending train, man. There's a lot of wrestling. I got you covered. Mr. O with the $4.99. Driving 2 hours right now to Savannah, Georgia for Raw tonight. Thank you for making the drive go by fast with the Double or Nothing review. You are very welcome. Alex with the $4.99. Some way, somehow, I am still tired from the show last night. Thanks for two streams today. That is Alex from Lewiston, Maine. Alex, thank you very much. Base Beerus says, buy or sell Fire Spot ECW One Night Stand 05 or WrestleMania 22. Trying to remember what the Fire Spot even was. It was the Dudley Boys, right? It was a 3D in the main event. I'm going to go WrestleMania 22 on that one. Outsider Kid with the $5. This was a show where I really felt how long it was, like past 12 midnight. Yes, it was a very long show. It was indeed a very long show. Geo Ninja Gaiden 86. LOL, screw them incels, bro. Yeah. Yeah, tell me about it. Thank you, Gio. The Juliet says, Julia having surgery on her broken wrist. I did see that. I question how quickly she'll be able to come back, but hopefully she'll be able to be back very soon. Base Beerus, God of Seduction, great stream. And Framart, oh, thank you very much. And thank you to Steve Mello for all his help, as always. I did the thumbnail, he did the layout. We are the powers of pain. Make a good tag team. Oz and Glorious, 36 months. Acknowledge me. Thoroughly enjoyed Double or Nothing and felt like I got my $50 worth, even if it wasn't perfect. An Oz says, Sala Monster is better than Gila Monsters or Vinsels. I gotta learn more about these Gila Monsters. Sam, with the $20. No message. Hey, Sam, thank you very much. Oz and Gloria, shout out to BlissFan, who knows that Mariah is better than Alexa. Uh-oh. Base Beerus says, Penta, probably not pleased with MJF's take on masks. Just Penta? I mean, they got plenty of luchadors on that roster. Maybe that's his first feud. It's going to be MJF against all the lucha talent. Jessica Herman, thank you for the $5. I had to put my dog down on Friday, so this stream is helping to deal with the grief. Good show last night. Thanks for all that you do. I'm very sorry to hear that. Losing a pet sucks. It's very tough. I'm not going to go through that again. Although having a pet is great, but yeah, that part of it is not fun. Thunder 4 says, how many top baby faces are left in the AEW women's division? I don't have the entire division in front of me, but you've got Thunder Rosa, right? You've got, when Britt Baker comes back and Jamie Hayter, my guess is they'll be baby faces. So you put them on that list. Serena Deeb, she's really not a heel. I mean, she technically is a baby face. Toni Storm is not really a baby face, but the fans have made her one. And I guess by association, Mariah May, you would consider her a baby face. The Willow Nightingale. I know there's more, but those are the main names that jump out at me. Dr. Bropio, Swerve against Evil at Forbidden Door. Oh my God, why would you even say that? Why would you even put that into the atmosphere? That would be fucking terrible. Isaiah Duzan, listening to you at work and heard that you mentioned people owning a mannequin. I have a mannequin in my house that I turned into a life-size Michael Myers. Yeah, but see, that at least is acceptable. I will accept that. Because you are a Michael Myers fan. So I will accept that. I have a mannequin head from many years ago when Al Snow and Head was all the rage. I borrowed it from a department store. I still have it up in the closet somewhere. Daniel Malcolm. Roll, Tony Khan, gently down the stream. Nope, we don't have that super chat, but there is a $22 one that we have. Fantastico TV with the $9.99. No question, been listening to you since 2007. Thank you for being the soundtrack that got me through all my rough times. Best wrestling podcast, hands down. Well, Fantastico, thank you for the fantastic super chat. Duff's Vids. Roasted scapegoat sounds delicious. Mercedes versus Willow is my match of the night. Pure wrestling, no garbage or weapons. Thanks, Solo, for the reviews. Thank you, brother. Project Libertad sent a $5 super chat. I'm probably alone on this as a New Japan fan, but Moxley as IWGP champion is a huge mistake, and it makes New Japan feel like AEW's NXT. I can see that. You've got the IWGP champion in the middle of the card on this show, on a show filled with titles. And I know it wasn't a title match, but, you know, positioning is important. And I could see where a New Japan fan would look at that and it would bother them. So you're not wrong in that. You're not wrong in that. The Real CS. MJF knew what he was doing by putting that tattoo by his ankle. His boots will be covering it. So if he eventually does go to WWE, it will not be awkward. He will eventually end up in WWE. And again, it will not be a big deal. It will be covered up. It will not be an issue. And Base Beer, a shout out to Jessica Herman. Sorry to hear. Feel better. All dogs go to heaven. Well, that is very kind of you. And thank you, Based. For the $9. Is that it? I guess that's it. There you go. So that's the message portion. Hey, Dr. Bropio, TK called in BetterHelp and MJF answered. Well, Tony Khan's got other issues that even BetterHelp can't fix. So he's going to have to deal with that. But anyway, thank you for the 615 likes. I know it would have been probably busier last night, and there's probably other streams and whatnot, but thank you to those who stuck with me and supported here on this stream. I do appreciate that. And right now, let's go ahead and, well, we got Mario's coming in before we move on here. Got a couple more super chats coming in. Let me get to these first. Out of curiosity, have there been any other wrestling podcasters that you have encountered issues with? Love the stream. No, not for 10 years. Since you know who. So it's been good. I get along with most everybody because I'm easy to get along with. As long as you're not a dum-dum on social media, I'm pretty easy to get along with. And Bender McSimpson with a $4.99. Mercedes reminded me of a lot of people, or reminded a lot of people, how great she is. Star-making performance from Willow. Loved the Swerve and Christian match. Yeah, it was a great pro wrestling match. It was fine. Yeah, there was nothing wrong with it. Hopefully bigger and better for Swerve from here, but I thought it was fine. It was just a very, very late spot for them in the show. You know, not being in the main event. But let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. I know you guys have been waiting for it since last night. So let's not keep you waiting any longer. I don't know. Do you think we'll have two be the bookers in one day? That's going to be up to you guys. If you guys come back and support tonight, we'll see. I guess this is kind of like when WWE back in the day, they would have these matinee shows. They'd have like the A crew, the B crew, the C crew. And you would have, they would run Boston in the afternoon and then New York at the Garden at night. This is the matinee show that you're getting here on Memorial Day. We begin with the Golden Lovers. Look at this. Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi. Two of the stars that are currently on the injured reserve list right now for Tony Khan. Oh, those were better days. Better days physically, better days just in general for Omega and for Ibushi. It'll be the Golden Lovers taking on beautiful Bobby and Stan Lane. I love it. I love it. Oh, the Midnights. You know, this right here would be a fantastic professional wrestling match. Now, of course, Jim Cornette is managing these two guys against Kenny Omega. So that would be kind of wild if you had Cornette managing the heels opposing Kenny Omega. I don't know what he may do with that tennis racket to Omega. He may chase Omega around the building with the racket. He may wrap barbed wire around the racket and chase after Omega. That would actually be kind of funny. Jim Cornette and Kenny Omega in the same match. Oh, boy. All right, women's be the booker. See what we come up with here. I love the random nature of it all. You never know what you're going to land on here. Let's see. We begin with... Wow. Did you hear that? I don't know if you heard that. That was a sonic boom. Yeah, it's pretty nasty weather here in New York. And holy shit. That was like an explosion. Look at this. Ash by Elegance bringing the explosions here. This is Dana Brooke. I may have soiled myself. Let's go here. Dana Brooke going to go one-on-one with Awesome Kong. Yep, power spying games, man. You got it right. Buzzer incoming. All right, main event time. And see, you guys don't even have to wait until midnight for it. Be the Booker main event. Let's do it. We got Doink the Clown. And this is the original Doink. This is Matt Bourne. This is the Doink. Doink the Clown. It's that kind of day here in Be the Booker. Doink the Clown going to go one-on-one with Dominic Mysterio. You know, I actually would love to have seen that match, just not in the main event. It's not the match you're going to headline the show with, but if I had the chance to book that as an attraction on my show, Original Doink against Dominic, I would book that match. I would fly them in, but they would not be my main event. I'm sorry. You cannot justify that as a main event match. As much as I love Evil Doink. Hey, Magician Sapphire, thank you for the $10. Says, thank God for the sound off and OTS. I tap out at 11:30 p.m. I couldn't do it after working a 12-hour shift. Yeah, that's rough. Darth Panic, what is that painting or poster on the wall behind you? That one right there. I've talked about it before. I forget offhand the name of it, but Nick Fluker, I believe, is the artist's name. I guess maybe it's hard to tell, but what it is, it's a forest scene, and there's like a little astronaut man who is walking through the forest, and each of those trees, you could kind of tell, has a different, like a different colored doorway that's like glowing. So there's like a blue entranceway and a red and a yellow off in the distance there. And it's like he's walking through this weird forest with different portals to other dimensions. I love it. I think it looks great. Looks even better in person. But there you go. Nick Fluker. I think it's Fluker. He's got other art that has the astronaut man in it if you look him up. Base Beera says Cornette would turn that racket sideways. Yeah. Cornette would turn that racket sideways, he says. And Devin from New Jersey, my source was telling me that the expiration date on food is meaningless because that's what we have our five senses for. Do you agree? Now, I go by the expiration. Certain things, if they're expired and it's been a few days or a week, it's fine. And then there are certain things where if it expires, it goes in the fucking trash. It just depends on what kind of food and how perishable it is. So anyway, there you go. Boy, it is really coming down outside here, man. It is pouring on Memorial Day. And of course, I have to go out in a couple of hours because of course I do. But I'm going to be back here. I may look like a wet rat, but I will be back here tonight after Monday Night Raw because we have to talk about the post-King of the Ring edition, post-King and Queen of the Ring episode of Raw. So that will be later on tonight. Do me a favor, if you have not already done so, do go ahead and hit the like button on the way out. You could drop a super chat or a super thanks or just share the link out with other people, other wrestling fans who you think may enjoy the review. It's the easiest thing you could do. Base Beer says Ben Stiller or Will Ferrell. I'm not a Will Ferrell guy, really. So I'll go Ben Stiller. Actually, I'll go Jerry Stiller over either one of them. And Marios, excited for tonight. And TNT, you and JD do great work. Yes, that will be tomorrow. I'll be live with JD for TNT on his channel at 8:30 tomorrow night. I'm sure there will be plenty to talk about, WWE and AEW, so you're going to get a lot of content out of me this week. I hope you will be around for it. Till then, be well, stay safe. Hopefully it's nicer where you are, and you enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day, and I will see you guys for the Raw review, the Raw post-show, later on tonight, live on YouTube. Until then, take care, guys.